Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
He's the reigning NFL MVP and an ESPY winner. He has his own cereal.
Part of this complete breakfast.
He puts ketchup on ketchup. He's Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes.
How you doing?
Exclusively on the program.
Presented by Community America Credit Union. With options like high interest savings, wealth management, Chiefs checking, and more. Community America is powering the rise of Kansas City. Visit communityamerica.com to learn more. And by Xfinity. Get live stats and scores right on your TV with Xfinity X1. Only from Xfinity.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Time to talk to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes joins us live here in the Reese Nichols studio. Patrick, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, doing real good. AFC West champs. Yeah. That's a pretty nice thing. We'll get to that in a second. But what's with throwing an interception, man? That's three. Like, you're almost like we might need a second hand.
Yeah, no,
to count
it was,
your INTs.
No, it was a bad decision on my part, trying to force one in there early in the game. But, try to keep those to a minimum. But they do happen. That's part of football. And I'm going to try to stay aggressive at the same time.
Your TD to INT ratio is just fine.
Yeah.
Is it kind of like a shock because you've been so good at not getting it? And listen, I think there's a stat that interceptable balls are caught 49% of the time, mm-hmm. what they would say could be. So it's kind of a 50-50 if the defender can get their hands on it, whether or not they can bring it in. But, yeah, that is kind of a shock because you have been so good at keeping the ball out of their hands.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tribute to a lot of things. I have a lot of good receivers that go up and make these contested catches that at least give me a chance that either they're catching it or nobody's catching it. And I have belief in them. And so I want to stay aggressive. I want to take these shots. And I believe that they're going to either come down with it or no one is. And that time I left it a little behind D-Rob where he wasn't able to kind of make a play for it. And if I had to put it out there in front of him, I think I would have gave him a chance to make a play.
I know you answered some questions about this, but first of all, how's your hand? I'm sitting here. It looks fine. Mm. I had some people say, well, look at his hand. Take a close look at his hand. It looks fine. How's it doing right now?
It's doing good. The swelling went down a lot in these last 2 days. And so it was a little nervous there after the game when it was a little swelled up and bruised up and stuff like that, but now the swelling has gone down. We've taken good care of it, and I was able to spin it around there a little bit so far.
You said you had to kind of change how you were throwing the ball. Coach Reed said in his teleconference on Monday that they kind of changed up the plays mm-hmm. and how you wanted to go about attacking him to maybe kind of adjust and maybe shorten things up. How deep? Was that just trial and error? You've been through something like that? Were you trying different grips? Like, how do you do that on the fly against the best defense in the NFL?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I did as a game went on was just try to put more loft, I guess you would say, on the ball. I wasn't driving them the way that I usually would. You saw some of those deep crosses to Trav and stuff like that. But, it was just part of it. I mean, I felt the injury. I knew I still wanted to play the game. I wanted to compete. And we found ways to move the ball. Obviously, we didn't play the second half the way we wanted to as an offense. Defense stepped up big time. And so we have to find a way to be better in that second half.
Are you worn down? I mean, because it's not – the game itself will wear you down, obviously. But you've also had to battle through the ankle. You've had to battle through the knee and now a wrist. Does that take even more out of you than say, you know, just – what you experienced last year, where for the most part you were pretty healthy, at least as far as we know?
Yeah, no, I think it's more of just being a little lackadaisical with my fundamentals is the biggest thing. I felt like there was times in the game where I could have stepped up, times in the game where I could have made some throws, but my feet weren't in the right places, and I think that's on me to be better as a quarterback. I mean, there was open guys that if I could have stepped up and kind of maybe hung on the ball a little bit, hung into the pocket a little bit longer, I could have hit guys and moved the chains, and so I got to just be better in that sense, and I understand that, and I know that as seasons go on, throughout my entire career, my fundamentals sometimes get a little bit more lazy, I guess you would say, and so for me, I'm just going to try to make sure that I take a good approach this week and come out better next week.
We're talking to Patrick Mahomes here in the Reese Nichols Studios. You mentioned you made your statement about the knee, and for anyone who didn't hear it, that it's as good as it can be, and it's pretty good, right? But ultimately, it's not going to be 100% until you can get to the offseason. Do you find yourself not – listen, you've proven anyone who steps on that field is tough, okay, with the size of the guys and the speed that they're moving. And you even more so, and quarterbacks. There are some quarterbacks that won't take a hit. You have more than proven that you will stand in there to the last second and deliver the ball. But there's also the fact that you need to stay on the field. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to, you know, be a tough guy and get knocked out of the game and not be able to help your team. Do you find yourself trying to protect to stay on the field. And again, not out of fear. Again, yep. I want to stress, you've proven that. But that, okay, I've got to do something a little bit different to make sure that my knee's not there. Maybe you back up. And some people have said he's dropping back further than he normally would. Do you find yourself kind of doing that? It seemed like you stepped up more in this game than you had maybe in the last game.
Yeah, I don't think not on purpose or because of injury am I kind of belling back, I guess you'd say. That's more of my fundamentals. If you look at even last season, near the end of the season last season, I was going through the same thing where I was kind of drifting back and relying too much on my arm instead of just using the right fundamentals and making the throws. As far as, like, try not to step up. I think usually when you're in the pocket, I mean, that's where you want to be at. So I'll step up and do those things in the pocket and have no worries and trust in the offensive line. I think the biggest time about protecting yourself is when you scramble and running down the field. And I think I do a good job of sliding and not trying to take the big hits, not trying to run anyone over or do anything like that. And so I think as long as I can just get my fundamentals back and keep that right, I guess, portion of weight on both feet and step up and make these throws, then we can get back to getting this offense rolling for an entire game.
You mentioned after the game, and I think after the game, about how when the cameras caught you, you know, talking to all the guys, you had them all around you, and you were kind of firing them up, and you were obviously quite animated about it. Why? What signals you? What goes off in you and says, okay, I got to say something to these guys. Now's the time that there's a message that needs to be sent, and I'm the guy to send it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just a part of the game. You can kind of feel the flow of the game. You can understand what's going on. And I think when you looked at that game, we did a lot of great things. I mean, obviously, we didn't finish the game the way we wanted to, but we got ourselves in a position to take this lead and give our defense the opportunity to go out there and make these stops that they did to win us the football game. And so for us, I just wanted to make sure the guys knew that. Obviously, we still didn't get the first downs that were needed in order to kind of ice the game, but just kind of let the guys know that we're still in the lead here, and we were up by 10 points at that time. And I wanted to say that, I mean, like, if we would have said that before the game, we'd have been perfectly fine with being up in that position in the fourth quarter. And so you feel the momentum of the game, and you feel the game flow, and you know when to talk and when to kind of just let everybody do what they need to do in order to have success.
I heard some people be critical of Travis Kelce on the fumble, which I invite anybody to get knocked up into the air and not have their arms try to go out to protect them or land or anything. It's one of the plays that just happens. The Patriots are a tremendous defense, and it just happens. But he's such a competitor, as are you, as are, I'm sure you would say, everybody on that team. But I've been around Travis enough to know how much he wants to win and how much he puts into it. What do you go say to him? I mean, do you have to get him? Because I can see him getting down on himself because he never wants to make a mistake. He wants to do everything right. You having the same kind of personality. What do you go say to him to make sure he's not checking out or not frustrated or not carrying that forward? Do you think you needed to go talk to him at that time?
Yeah, I don't know if I needed to necessarily talk to him, but whenever I talk to Trav, I mean, he, like you said, he's had so much success. He understands how to do it the right way. I just tell him to be himself. I mean, that's the biggest thing that he can do. If, as long as he's doing what he usually does, trying to just beat a competitor, trying to find a way to win, then we're in good shape. And I think that's what he understands is I've seen him make that same exact play, hit the sideline, and go down and score a touchdown. So I want him to always have that confidence that he can be who he is and that we're going to have success doing that.
All right. You mentioned not getting the first downs and maybe finishing it off as an offense. Is that a concern? Is there something the Patriots cracked some kind of cheat code on you guys as how to stop you towards the end?
No. I mean, I don't know if it was that. Obviously, they have a good defense, and we did put up points in that first half, and we started off in the second half actually pretty good with the first drive. It just kind of goes with the game. I mean, whenever you make mistakes as far as me not maybe stepping up and getting to that next read or like you said, the fumble, or maybe we didn't hit the run play the right way, then defenses that are really good get stops. And so for us, we just have to make sure that we keep being great at what we do every single play and not get lazy with where we're at. We have to keep getting better and better as the games go on. And I think you've seen parts in games every single game this year where we've been great, and then there's been times that we haven't been who we think we can be. And so I think as we build, we're just going to keep getting more and more consistent, and with the defense playing like they are, I think we have a good chance in every single game we have left.
You guys didn't play a perfect game. You know, we mentioned some of the mistakes there. You know, special teams, and Dave Tobe is the greatest special teams coach that's ever lived. I've seen the statistical breakdowns, and they had a breakdown. You know, you had two turnovers, and that is almost like a third turnover, yet you still won, and you won by a full score. Does that give you even more confidence that you didn't play? Like, it's, listen, everybody'd like to win 50-3, right? Yeah. But when you go out and you don't have your best day and you're still better than a team that was 10-2 and is the defending champions, what does that do for the confidence of this team?
Yeah, I think these last few weeks has really built the confidence for this team, because we understand that we haven't played our best game. And whenever you're in the playoffs and then you get into these late December football games, you're going to be in tight, contested games, and you have to find a way to win. And I think this team has done a great job here recently of just finding a way to win the game, no matter how it's done, if it's the offense, if it's the defense or special teams. We're just trying to find a way to come out with a W in the end. And whenever you have a team like that, whenever you do play your best game, hopefully it's at the right time and we can find a way to make a run at this thing.
All right, good or bad, and you're always very humble about this, but you are a rock star, right? That is what you have become in the world of sports and the world of entertainment, and that drags people with you. And there was a situation, it's become a national story, that your girlfriend Brittany was tweeting about how people were being rude to her or being offensive. Mm-hmm. How big a problem is that for you, for her, for your family members, that now, you know, she is a public entity and now people are trying to, you know, go towards her? What is that? Is that, that's got to be a massive, everyone's family is a distraction. It's a good one, right?
Yep.
Family and friends are, but they take away. How much has this affected you in this situation?
Yeah, it hasn't really affected me or my family really in a sense. I mean, she's passionate. She loves the game. I mean, I love her and her passion she shows. She played soccer professionally and did everything like that. So she was into the game, and stuff happens, but we kind of just move on and we get going, and we have a great opponent coming in this week. So I'm excited to be able to play at home at Arrowhead.
It's that easy to just set it off to the side, or is that's the job? That's what you have to do.
Yeah, I mean, you understand it, and I mean, it's always, you keep moving forward. You're never looking back, and you understand that we played a great game against a great team and a great atmosphere. And so for us now, it's about moving on to that next opponent, because Denver's playing really good football right now, and we're excited for that opportunity.
The Broncos are the next opponent. There's no chance of a letdown. I mean, you got a huge win against the Pats. You're AFC West champs. Love the shirts.
Yeah.
But is there any fear of a letdown?
I don't think so with this team. I mean, we understand that we still need to get better if we want to get to our ultimate goal, and we understand that they're playing really good football right now. And so we played this team earlier in the year, and we know how good a football team this team is, and so we're going to make sure that we come with our best effort this weekend.
All right, Patrick Mahomes is in the Reese Nichols studio. Time for our Kansas Lottery Final Four. Let's start with this. Did you have a big wager on Tech last night? That was a big upset.
I didn't have anyone that I knew from Louisville that would wager me, but I'm always rooting for those guys.
All right. What did Brady say after the game?
Yeah, I mean, just the normal QB talk. I mean, good luck the rest of the way out and stuff like that.
Tyrann Mathieu sat in a freezer for 20 minutes as part of, pointing out to people to take care of your pets, his PETA deal, and was talking about what happens to the dogs. I'm just curious. Great message, by the way. Could you last longer than 20 minutes in the freezer?
I don't know. He's a pretty tough guy, but I'm pretty tough too. So we probably one of us would just keep freezing until one of us is passed out, I guess.
So you'd go for it.
Yeah,
I'd
go for it for
sure.
But
you'd go for it. All right, and finally, is the West enough?
That's not our goal. That was one of our goals, but we have a lot more goals that we want to keep building on. But like we always say, it's day by day. You have to go by every single day and be great and understand the process of it. And we know that we got to keep building in order to get to where we want to be at.
Patrick, thanks so much for the time, buddy. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
The Program with Seren Petro. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. He's a pastor who likes the passing game, an attorney who enjoys play action more than class action, and he loves to watch Chiefs game tape for hours and hours and hours. He's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on The Program.
Yes, indeed, The Athletic. Film analyst Seth Kaiser with us. He's brought to you by our friends at Big O Tires. Their biggest sale of the year is going on right now. Big O Tires, big on service, guaranteed low prices. Now through December 23rd, don't miss the biggest tire sale of the year at Big O Tires. Buy two select tires, get two free with the purchase of a one-year alignment and tire protection package. That's 50% off your tires. Get two tires absolutely free. Big O Tire stores are open 7 days a week. You heard me right. You have until December 23rd. Buy two, get two free with the purchase of an alignment and tire protection package. It's only at Big O Tire. 16 locations around the metro. ASE certified technicians on every make of car are there. Maintenance to be done as well. Oil changes, brakes, car batteries. You think of it, they do it. At Big O Tires, visit BigOTires.com for more details and to find the location nearest you. Let's talk some Chiefs football with Seth Kaiser from The Athletic. Seth, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing really, really well. How about yourself?
No complaints, and very excited about a win that I thought the Chiefs didn't play particularly well in going to Foxborough, yet they get the win, and they do it by a full 7 points. I think that's the mark of a really good team, when you can win not playing your best. And as always, Seth, you've broken down the mistakes that were made and have the film to back it up. Let's start with the interior of the offensive line. When I read your story that just came out a couple of hours ago, I was pleased to see that you saw the same thing I did, and that's that LDT did not have a good game.
Yeah, he really didn't. There's been a lot of heat on whoever's been at left guard and Austin Reiter this year, and I understand some of that because there's been some struggles there. But I actually went into it planning on looking at the differences between Wisniewski and Wiley, because I really like Wisniewski. I think he belongs on the field. He knows what he's doing. He's a veteran guy. He recognizes stunts and twists. He does a good job. But as I was watching, I was charting their snaps. LDT just kept kind of popping up onto the screen, which is not a good thing. If you are reviewing one offensive lineman, another one pops off the screen, that's a bad thing. You know, maybe like with a cornerback or a wide receiver, that's a good thing. Bad with offensive linemen. I charted at least 5 plays where there was an almost instant pressure directly due to LDT, and that was with me not really focusing on him. He really struggled, and it wasn't just in picking up stunts and twists. It wasn't picking up delayed blitzes. He was just losing some one-on-one matchups that he shouldn't. There were a couple of really nice play designs that had open receivers that you just needed an extra second of time, and he couldn't buy Mahomes that. Playing right guard, he's asked to be one-on-one in pass protection a little more often than left guard. And I got to say, he doesn't look like he's been up to the task. And so I went back and reviewed a few other games, and this has been a pretty consistent issue this year. He's just not playing at the level he's played at previously.
You mentioned you think potentially injury or what, just regression? I mean, I would tend to think more a veteran is hurt, especially right. The way he seems to be getting thrown around.
Yeah, he's not playing as strong as he normally does, for sure. He used to be what made him so unique and such a good investment, even though his background was such an interesting one, was he has a combination of really good athleticism, but he's also strong. And most of the time, especially with interior linemen, you're usually picking, right? It's one or the other. You're generally not going to have both unless you've got, like, even if you've got a really good technician like Mitch Morse, he's still probably not going to be as strong. The Rodney Hudsons of the world are few and far between. And so with him, he had that combination where he could do both. But he does seem to just not be – he's getting thrown around a little more. And when he does – when he's getting up, he seems like he's getting up a little bit slowly. Of course, it's all speculation, but he has played at a significantly higher level than he is right now. When he got signed to that big contract by John Dorsey, I thought that it might be a little bit rich, but I wasn't surprised, and I thought it was a decent deal. And that's the type of level he was playing at, but now – He's been arguably, at least against the Patriots, he was the weakest link on the offensive line.
How has Mahomes done, according to your numbers? I thought he did a better job of stepping up into the pocket in this game, but you came away, it looks like, thinking that it was same old as far as maybe not trusting the line, maybe scrambling too much, maybe dropping too much.
Well, it was kind of a yes and no situation. I would say he performed better against the Patriots than he had the previous 2 weeks, even though, you know, I chart happy feet snaps where a quarterback bails out of a clean pocket, and I chart missed shots where you've got an open receiver that, based on the progressions, as well as I can tell, they should have seen him. And, you know, that's a dangerous game you play there because it's always, oh, well, Hill was wide open in the end zone, you know, if someone's getting tackled or something. But I try to keep it as fair as possible. He had the highest number of missed shots and happy feet snaps that he's had all season, and it wasn't even close. It's actually at a level that I would normally ascribe vibe to an average quarterback at best. On the other hand, when there actually was pressure, he handled it really well. He moved around the pocket and avoided pressure and kept his eyes up. And, I mean, he took some shots, like that 3rd and 19 to Hill. On that 2nd and 25, he took another big hit. I don't know how he got the ball to Hardman. I mean, he made some really nice throws. He had a really great throw to Watkins. The Watkins dropped, and there was a penalty anyway. So he made some really nice throws, and he handled pressure when it was there very well. The weird part about the game is when there wasn't pressure was when he was kind of running from ghosts a little bit, and it cost him on a few plays. There were a couple times where he had Tyreek Hill open, and Travis Kelce open once, where he just stayed calm in the pocket and not kind of run from phantom pressure, he had options and places to throw the ball. That happened 5 or 6 times, which, for frame of reference, last year he averaged a little under 2 happy feet snaps per game, you know, where he's bailing out of a clean pocket. And he only missed about 1.1 shots per game, which are both very, very good numbers. Not quite elite in the happy feet department because, you know, like Drew Brees never does it, ever. But it's, as far as missed shots go, he was right up there with the elites of the NFL that I've charted. And so it's interesting seeing him handle actual pressure so well and then handle phantom pressure so poorly at times. So it was an interesting game, but I do think it was better. His accuracy was back up, and he did a bunch of little things, I think, better than he had the previous 2 games, especially when you factor in the hand injury.
All right, we're talking to Seth Kizer from The Athletic here. He joins us on our Sprint guest line. You kind of grouped together Mecole Hardman and Darwin Thompson and talked about it, and it seems like you'd like to see them play more, right? That's basically what you're getting at with them playing more, right?
Absolutely. So the Chiefs' offense is predicated on speed, and those are guys that add speed to the offense. They're both very explosive players.
So here's my question, though. Like, I always come at it from, I don't think Andy Reid's a moron, right? And I don't think his coordinators are morons.
Right.
So what's the reason for not playing him more? And my assumption is that Darwin Thompson, and you kind of cover this on the running back side with the fact that Spencer Ware's back and that he was used in the third down, the obvious third down situations. Darwin Thompson I talked to today in the locker room, and he said, oh, yeah, it's night and day where he's at now at picking up the blitz and where he was before the season. And maybe he could handle it all. But, I mean, isn't that what we're seeing? And doesn't the tape show that what they don't want him doing is being in an obvious passing down and having to pick up the blitz? They put him out there when they want to get him the ball. Really, both of them, they're out there when they want to get them the ball or be a primary decoy to try to freeze somebody or draw somebody out to get someone else open.
I think that's pretty accurate. Hardman, in particular, I think he only had 14 snaps against the Patriots, which is interesting because, you know, in that time he manages to make what one might argue is the biggest offensive play of the game, and one in which he showed off the traits that lead people to want him being on the field more. With Thompson, I think it's almost certainly a pass protection issue and a trust issue. I think Andy Reid really is saving LeSean McCoy for the playoffs. I think he trusts him in all sorts of situations, but he's just waiting. I think he wants to make sure McCoy's as fresh as possible because he's about 30. That's what you do. He clearly trusts Spencer Ware in pass protection, and you can see why. I actually had a lot of fun watching Spencer Ware's tape. He leveled the defensive end in pass protection on one of his snaps. And, I mean, he's a big guy, and he clearly takes that responsibility seriously. He's also a good route runner, and so he can handle getting the ball in space too if there's no one for him to block. But I think it's a pass protection issue. When they ask Darwin Thompson to block, it's almost always on rollouts where he's not being asked to directly take on a blitzer. Instead, he's being asked to take someone out at the knees, right, while in space on the move. So I think it is a trust issue. So with Thompson, I get that. It's a little frustrating, but I do understand, you know, you've got to pick your spots there or it might get exploited. Hardman is much more mystifying to me. I assume it's mostly a learning the offense. Everyone says it takes 2 or 3 years for wide receivers to learn Reed's offense. I assume that's the primary issue there, but it is frustrating when you see how much more explosive he looks in his routes than Watkins or Robinson. And it's really easy to envision him on the other side of the field from Tyreek Hill and wonder why you can't draw more of that.
I mean, I think it comes down to a lot of Reed's offense. Like the receivers, it's not really your traditional route tree. I mean, they're expected to read – the zone in particular, read the zone coverage, and then run to the space that's open. So you have to adjust. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for him, I think the reason it takes so long is, you know, he's used to run a 15-yard out. And regardless of what the coverage is, you run 15 yards, you put your leg in the ground, and you cut out. Reed kind of rounds things off, kind of more Dick Vermeil, more Air Coryell-ish than the traditional West Coast offense. But they also, they take the angle away from the defender. I mean, he's really, I mean, they use that term every now and then, and they usually talk about it when Mahomes is scrambling, that he'll go ahead and throw the receiver open. Like, he throws to the open field where he knows the defenders can't get there and leads the receiver in where they want to go. I think that happens on a lot more plays than just when there's a scramble. Do you agree?
I do. Mahomes loves to do that. And I also agree. I think that's a good catch that they do have them. One way I saw it phrased by someone on Twitter, I can't remember who, is that they have them running to space more than running routes.
Right.
Which can be very effective against zones. But, you know, there's a downside to that in that it can take longer to learn, and you've got to trust someone to be able to line up anywhere and know exactly where he needs to be. And then the plays where Reed does have them run specific routes, they're very specific in terms of who's going where, because it's designed to create stress on the defense. Or, you know, if they're in man coverage, you need to be right here, so you're setting a pick on someone, all that stuff. So I get the dilemma that you face there. The reality is, though, that the offense hasn't been quite as explosive lately, and when you do have a guy that can outrun anyone else on the field, it's tough not to oversimplify things a little bit, you know, and just want to go the full Madden route and say, man, why are we not just putting him on one side of the field, putting him on the other side of the field, say they're both going to run go routes or posts, so we know the safeties both need to be deep. Let's see what we can do with that for a few more snaps. And I'm hopeful that over time you continue to see a little bit more. But, yes, right now it's an understanding the offense issue. They trust Robinson. They trust Watkins to run all the routes. I don't think they trust Hardman with that.
All right. Do you have any other theories as to why the offense is taking a step back?
I think, you know, part of it, you know, they were playing the Patriots. The Patriots do have a really good defense. Then there were just some plays where they were just a shade away from a big play, and the Patriots made a nice play. You know, it's been three games of kind of like, yeah, they've looked okay, but not great. Against Oakland, they didn't really need to be great. You know, it was kind of one of those games that was over so quickly that it's tough to say. And then the Chargers game was just a weird game overall. I mean, they're one game removed from the offense looking generally fantastic against the Titans. And that's, you know, and with Mahomes, who played about as good a game as I've seen him play against the Titans. It was just the defense that kind of imploded. So I my theory is basically, you know, regression does come for everyone. Apparently we were wrong, and Mahomes isn't regression-proof. I think struggling through injuries has taken a toll on Mahomes this season. It's got to affect the way you play eventually. And so I think it's just a matter of you've got guys that have been playing together for two or three or four weeks that were supposed to have been playing together for the entire season by now. And I think these things just take time. I also think that I haven't seen as much diversity in play calling this year as I've seen in previous years. I think we talked about that previously, that every year Andy Reid seems to unveil some new stuff that is just like, you know, it's folded in from a previous concept, and it just blows everyone's mind, and it's great. This year, it just seems like the offense is mostly a continuation of last year's offense without a lot of new wrinkles. And so it could be that defenses have just adjusted a little bit.
I think it's a combination of things. I think it's all the things that we're talking about. I think it's injuries to other players, lack of cohesion because guys are in and out of the lineup, the issues on the offensive line up front, which are also combination with the injuries to Patrick Mahomes. You know, I think we do need to give some credit to the opposition. I'd have to go back and look at, you know, what the defenses they played ranked last year compared to this year. Maybe it's just the schedule has given them tougher defenses to go against. But I do think that, you know, yes, a whole offseason, you ought to get a little bit better at stopping Andy Reid. But I also think necessity is the mother of invention. And they haven't needed it a lot lately. Sure. You know, they've started winning again. They're getting up, and their defense is playing well. Now, they needed it against the Patriots. I won't put that one in there because nobody feels like a 7-point lead is safe, particularly after the Chargers, you know, did what they did to them at the end of last year with the touchdown and the two to beat them, and everybody in the city and Chiefs fans everywhere were terrified that that was going to happen against the Patriots again. But right. I think all those factors go into it. But if you're playing better defensively, and so I think it was pure frustration that they didn't finish the game against the Patriots. But in all the games that you're winning and your defense is playing better, is it possible that a lot of those concepts, Andy Reid had to bring them all out last year because it's what he had to do to win the games to get to the number one seed. But now if he's able to win games and not unveil everything, then maybe we're going to see some of that new stuff come postseason time.
And that would be tremendous. I kind of have – I've got this conspiracy theory I'm working on with regards to that in terms of how they approach this season. And maybe you and I have even chatted about that. That this year they've definitely treated like a Super Bowl year. They clearly had a plan for this year and felt like it was going to be something special. Andy Reid's a guy who plans everything, and I could very much see him saving an install or two for the playoffs after seeing kind of what happened last year where they were able to, you know, blow the doors off of Indy, and, you know, then the Patriots, it was kind of a requirement that Mahomes basically played a bunch of hero ball. So I could see them saying, well, you know what? Let's save something because we're going to make the playoffs. And so all we need to do is win three or four games. Well, I can dust off enough new stuff for three or four games to really give us an edge and maybe save some of that stuff. And that could be it. One interesting thing that maybe would lend itself to this theory is that against the Patriots, we suddenly saw a lot more of Tyreek Hill in motion than we've been seeing in the last three or four weeks, which is kind of, it was a staple last year, something that really helps them. We also saw a few things like read option stuff lately, some option looks, some of Hill in the and even Kelce in the backfield, and not just on the Wildcat, but in some other formations as well. So it was interesting to see Reed dust off a bunch of stuff that we hadn't seen previously against the Patriots. That does tend to lend itself to he's holding a few things back, waiting for games that are really big. Now, of course, I think what a lot of fans would argue is it would have been great to have a couple more W's in their pocket to where they didn't have to rely on other teams to get a two seed. But like you said, with injuries, I'm not even sure if some of those games it was really an option to try to scheme your way to victory when Mahomes was hobbling around on one leg or when you're playing the Packers with Matt Moore. So that's a theory that I buy into, but I think we're not going to know until we see the playoffs and all of a sudden, you know, the Chiefs, you know, throw up a 50-burger on someone.
All right, we're talking right now with Seth Kizer from The Athletic, film analyst for The Athletic, Chiefs film analyst. How about the defense overall? Another game where they keep the opposition under 100 yards rushing. They keep the opposition under 300 total yards. The Pats are bad on offense. This game, more about the Pats' bad offense or more about the Chiefs' better defense?
I think if I were going to say which one was a little bit more, I think it would be that the Chiefs were a better defense. I understand this isn't the same Patriots team that they played last year. You know, missing Gronkowski is a big deal. But Tom Brady really dissected the Chiefs last year when he really needed to. And you just saw it wasn't there this year. The type of pressure that he faced was different. The coverage was much better. And they're just a different defense. And it certainly helps, you know, poor Frank Clark, apparently, you know, I saw a report he lost like 10 pounds in being sick, and he still might be a little bit sick today. But he played really well, even just playing half the snaps. And I think what you saw is the ceiling of this defense keeps getting raised and raised and raised because Jones played really well too. And when you've got Clark playing really well and Jones is playing really well and Okafor's back, the coverage on the back end is a little more complicated. Like Breland's pick, Bashaud Breland, the more you look at it, I don't think it was necessarily true that he had man coverage and he blew the assignment and thus was in position. It looked more like it was a little more of a complicated zone look. You can call it cover six or whatever. People's terminology differs. But they're using things that are a little bit more complicated on the back end, and it shows. And so I think all of those things combined to where you've got a defense that's just playing much, much better. And most importantly, they didn't let the Patriots change the dynamic of the game by running the ball. The Patriots tried at first, and they just couldn't do it. And so that was really encouraging to see.
A couple things there. First of all, on the Breland play at the end to knock the ball away, a nice play by Tyrann Mathieu of getting out of his way, right? They run a pick play, and those two do a nice job. And this is where you need reps together and some chemistry They don't just plow into each other and create a wide-open guy. Tyrann Mathieu goes all the way around Breland to come back and still get coverage on his guy who's taking the inside move and allow Breland to run freely to the outside and get there to be in position to make that play. So I thought that was nice on the combination that was there. And then you talk about stopping the run. Every time you've got a video of them stopping the run, Chris Jones isn't on the field. You know, have they settled into Chris Jones as just a pass rusher or coincidentally he's on the field because they ran when it was a passing down?
I think that's funny because there were two other video clips I could have used. The very first run play that got stuffed was Chris Jones primarily.
Okay.
And so there were a couple other video clips I could have used that were Chris Jones. I was actually going to write a little more about how he's been stronger at the point of attack this year, but I had already covered 3,000 words and a bunch of topics, and so I ran out of room. Jones is a more specific type of run stopper. He's generally going to be more of a gap shooter, but he's shown himself in Spag's system to be perfectly capable of whether you want to call it stacking and shedding, holding it up at the point of attack. He's shown himself perfectly capable of it. I do think he gets overzealous at times shooting gaps, but he's an excellent run defender in my opinion. He just doesn't defend the run quite the same way as Pinnell and Nnadi. You know, those guys are more stout. They're not going to be as much gap shooters. They can take on double teams a little bit better. But I do think the problem we've had in previous years, I thought Jones was a good run defender, but he was the type of run defender that you need other guys to perform too. There was the fourth down, Jones shot into the backfield, and he almost got there, but they gave way elsewhere along the line. So I think Jones is just fine against the run, but I do think now it's no longer a disaster if he rotates out and they have other guys that can fill in on the interior who are doing really well, including Colin Saunders, who has come farther as a rookie than most defensive linemen I can remember.
I agree. He's still not getting that many snaps. If they're winning,
right,
that's fine. It's working. But I think they're going to run into a team now with the Broncos. This one should be, go back to Eric Eager's call, two fatties and a blitz, right? We should see a lot of Nnadi and Colin Saunders, neither of which are really fat, folks. Don't worry. I'm aware of where they're at. They're fine as far as the defensive tackle position goes. But it's just a joke that we have for that. But we should see more of them because the Broncos, even with Drew Lock playing well, they're not going to want to throw it all on Drew Lock against this team's pass rush, right?
I would imagine so. You just never know, and that's kind of the interesting thing when you play someone who, you know, a quarterback who's only been out a couple times. You know, against Flacco, it was send the house and see if he can deal with it, and he couldn't. I mean, snap after snap. I wouldn't be surprised to see them use something similar, which either that or go a completely different direction and see if they can confuse a young player into making dumb throws. You know, stack up the box, threaten blitz, and then drop everyone but three guys into coverage. And you know what? If those three guys you have rushing are Frank Clark, Chris Jones, and Alex Okafor, Tano Passanio, you still might get a little bit of pressure. And so I think I could see them using a little bit more to try to bait him into making bad throws as a young player. But definitely the run game is going to be more of an issue. The Broncos couldn't run the ball very successfully against them in the first meeting. And so I'm curious how both teams have tried to respond. Because I know that first, you know, people were kind of afraid because the Chiefs' run defense was struggling at that point that the Broncos were going to run all over them with Phillip Lindsay, who can really play. And it just didn't happen. And that's one of the reasons they were able to beat them so soundly. So I'm excited to see how Spagnuolo deals with a young, inexperienced quarterback because he's certainly done a good job against, you know, Tom Brady and then Derek Carr, who was until recently having a really good year, against Phil Rivers. I'd argue the Chiefs have played Lamar Jackson arguably better than anyone. And so they've done a good job. I'm interested to see what they do with a rookie.
And just as far as we talked about the Chiefs' ability to get after the quarterback, and they are currently sitting at 11th in sacks per pass rush attempt. Last year they were 8th. Last year they had 8.23% of the time that they got to the quarterback was sacks. Now these are just sacks. They don't count pressures. This year they're at 8.01%. So I've heard some people say, you know, knock that all the personnel moves were bad and D Ford and all this. They're almost exactly the same while dealing with a number of injuries as far as the number of times they get to the quarterback per attempt. You know, when you make stops, it gets harder to have the quantity of sacks.
Right.
Do you agree
there's
that
fewer chances there?
Yeah, that pass rush wise, I would say they're not quite as good as they were last year, but they're not far off, and they're significantly better against the run, and they're significantly better in coverage.
I agree with all of that, and I would say there's potential. It's tough to, you know, Dee Ford, when he's completely, fully healthy and playing at his absolute best, is a really, really good pass rusher. The problem is he's not usually like that. And so it's tough to match when you've got a Houston and you've got a Jones and you've got a Ford. It's going to be tough to match the output. But I'll tell you, with Clark playing at the level that he played against the Patriots, and you got to remember, you know, Oakland game, he was hurt most of that game. He dominated the game the previous week. When he plays like that, and with Jones on the field and Okafor playing pretty well, Passanio playing pretty well, I think that pass rush is right there. And when you combine that with a scheme that I think is better, that I think is more creative, that I think blitzes at more opportune times and in more efficient ways, I have more movement up front, I think the pass rush can be just as good and more consistent, whereas last year it could get shut down by doing a few different things. So I think you can say that they've got the potential to be better across the board. They're definitely better against the run. And like you said, just miles apart in coverage.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that defensively, being better on defense is taking some pressure off the offense. And maybe that's another one of the things that, you know, it's why I think that Andy Reid takes his foot off the throttle a little bit. And one of the reasons why we're seeing what we're seeing. We're talking to Seth Kizer here from The Athletic. Final Four time. For you, Seth, four quickies brought to you by our friends at the Kansas Lottery, the final Kansas Lottery Holiday Millionaire Raffle. Early bird drawing for $50,000. It's just around the corner. Yes, just around the corner on December 15th. But don't wait to buy your tickets, because when they're gone, they're gone. Visit kslottery.com for more details. I will start you with this. What seed do the Chiefs end up with?
I think they end up with a 3 seed, but it gets really, really interesting at the end.
Okay. Mahomes' TD total, passing TD total, will be what?
I don't even know what he's at this point. Is it 20, 21?
21, isn't it?
I think so, something like that.
Here, I'll tell you. Yeah, 21, 21.
Okay. I'm going to say 28.
28. Nope. I need him to get to 31. I want his total to be higher than the Chiefs' record was every single season of his career. The record was 30, so I want him to get to at least 28. All right, percentage of the shopping that's done in your house?
By myself or by my significant other?
Both.
I don't really shop. It's like a 1-99 ratio.
All right, I like that. I like that. That's well done. All right, and give me your prediction on this game. What do you think happens between the Chiefs and Broncos?
You know, it's so unpredictable with a rookie quarterback. This could be the week he craters. I think the Chiefs are playing really well defensively, and I think it's just a matter of time before that offense is fully back rather than just being solid. And so I think they win comfortably by 10 or so.
Okay. Chiefs by 10. I'll take it. Seth, great stuff as always, buddy. Keep up the great work. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
All right, Seth Kizer. Great, great stuff at The Athletic. You can check it out there and see the great work that he does, where he breaks down all the film, has the film backing up for what he is saying. It's great stuff. We'll take a break. Come back, give you some things you need to know. You're in the program.
The Program with Seren Petro. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, a couple things you need to know as we get out of here. Minnesota Vikings wide receiver Adam Thielen, he's expected to return to the lineup Sunday against the Chargers. So if you're still alive in your playoffs, Thielen should go. Bucks quarterback Jameis Winston says he's going to play Sunday against the Lions with a hairline fracture in the thumb of his throwing hand. Hawk Harrelson, former White Sox player, of course, called games for 34 years, won the Hall of Fame's Ford C. Frick Award. Excellence in broadcasting. I think that's richly deserved.
Love the Hawk.
Baseball is saying they will expand the netting in place next season at all 30 ballparks, so there'll be even more area protecting the fans. Free agent starting pitcher Tanner Roark reached a 2-year, $24 million deal with the Blue Jays, according to our Jeff Passan. Right-hander Blake Treinen is in agreement with the Dodgers on a 1-year, $10 million deal. And we'll see. Maybe the Royals will be making a splash here before long.